on this edition for Saturday, May 16th, states ease into reopening. COVID-19 presents new hurdles in Florida for a voter restoration victory. And a rare visit to one of the most remote places on Earth, the Rose Atoll, where scientists are watching for signs of climate change. Next on PBS NewsHour Weekend.
PBS NewsHour Weekend is made possible by Bernard and Irene Schwartz, Sue and Edgar Wackenheim III, the Cheryl and Philip Milstein family, the JPB Foundation, Rosalind P. Walter, Barbara Hope Zuckerberg, Charles Rosenblum. We try to live in the moment to not miss what's right in front of us. At Mutual of America, we believe taking care of tomorrow can help you make the most of today. Mutual of America Financial Group, retirement services and investments. Additional support has been provided by and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and by contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you.
Good evening and thanks for joining us. More than two-thirds of states are now allowing reopenings after weeks of orders to stay at home and to close businesses in order to contain the COVID-19 outbreak. It's the first round in a new phase for the country and the world. Let's get started with today's top news. A massive new spending bill narrowly passed in the House of Representatives last night, setting up a battle with the Senate and President Trump.
The HEROES bill is passed.
Democrats and one Republican voted to authorize $3 trillion in additional COVID-19 financial aid. The Republican majority in the Senate is opposed, and President Trump said he will veto the bill in its current form if it reaches his desk. And before leaving last night, the House also approved a rules change that means members may now cast votes from home. Proxy voting will allow a representative who is present to bring as many as 10 other members' votes to the floor. Late last night, President Trump removed State Department Inspector General Steve Linnick from his job, replacing him with an ally of Vice President Mike Pence. Linnick was an appointee of President Barack Obama. President Trump has replaced several federal IGs in the last few months. Democrats called Linnick's ouster outrageous, and they accused the president of retaliating against the inspector general for opening an unspecified investigation into Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Michigan Congressman Justin Amash announced today on Twitter that he will not run for president. Amash said, "I've concluded that circumstances don't lend themselves to my success as a candidate for president this year, and therefore I will not be a candidate." He announced his campaign for the Libertarian Party's nomination just last month. Amash left the Republican Party in 2019 and has been a vocal critic of President Donald Trump. Retail sales are collapsing during the pandemic, and another national chain, JCPenney, filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy late yesterday. The 118-year-old company said it will close some stores in phases and will announce more details in the coming weeks. Neiman Marcus, J. Crew, and Stage Stores have also filed for bankruptcy in the past few weeks. Coronavirus cases are still rising in the United States. There are now more than 1.4 million confirmed cases and close to 88,000 deaths. States are allowing reopenings using different plans. Barbershops and salons are open in Texas. Gyms will open there on Monday. In parts of New York State and Ohio, restaurants and other businesses are reopening with restrictions. But in New York City, where more than 27,000 people have died from COVID-19, a strict stay-at-home order remains until at least June 13th. With summer right around the corner, New Jersey announced this week that beaches would be open by Memorial Day weekend, with some restrictions. The openings are weeks behind other coastal states like Georgia and Florida, but as one of the states hardest hit by the COVID-19 pandemic, local officials say they are proceeding cautiously. At exactly 10 a.m. yesterday, barriers that had been blocking the boardwalk and beach in Seaside Heights, New Jersey, were pushed aside. An announcement made it official.
These beaches are now officially open. Once again, these beaches are now officially open.
It's a sign that things are returning to normal in this quintessential Jersey Shore town, sort of.
We're looking to see how we do with the social distance, and that's going to be our test today.
Tony Vaz is the mayor of Seaside Heights. After nearly 2 months of being closed because of COVID-19, visitors can now walk and ride bikes on the boardwalk, provided they heed the rule of 6 feet between groups of people. On the beach, there's no swimming or sunbathing, but the public can walk, fish, and even surf. Mayor Vaz says it's just the first phase of Seaside Heights' reopening.
I'm optimistic that this is a good first step. Obviously, I would love to see everything open. I would love to see us swimming and so forth. But we have to recognize that we have to take this in steps.
Seaside Heights is one of more than three dozen communities along the Jersey Shore grappling with how best to reopen. In neighboring Seaside Park, beaches are already open to sunbathers, provided beachgoers keep their distance. But by Memorial Day weekend, all beaches in New Jersey will be open. On Thursday, Governor Phil Murphy officially gave the go-ahead and issued statewide guidance.
We want everyone to have fun, but we need everyone to be safe. To accomplish both, we will be requiring restrictions on how many beachgoers may be allowed on any beach or lakefront. And the social distancing we've been practicing in our hometowns will be extended to our beaches.
Here in Seaside Heights, many are bracing for a summer season unlike any other.
I don't know how much business we'll do, but just being open is incredible. It's a great feeling.
John Gatto is the manager of Van Holten's Chocolate and Sweet Shop on the Seaside Heights Boardwalk. He opened up today for takeout only.
I mean, we are open year-round, but our big months are June, July, and August, and those are the big months.
Only restaurants and food vendors have the go-ahead to open. Many attractions on the boardwalk remain closed, including Amusement Park Casino Pier, and there's no timeline on when businesses like this may be allowed to open. Marketing manager Maria Mastura-Saltzman says they have started preparing for how social distancing could be implemented in the park.
We have decals already ready for the floors to make sure people stand on each decal in the lines and on the rides and the slides, and trying to limit as many people in the park at the one time.
Saltzman says the COVID-19 shutdown is just the latest challenge for Seaside Heights, which was ravaged by a massive fire in 2013 and hit hard by Superstorm Sandy in 2012. But she says it's crucial for this park and its 500 seasonal workers to try and open before the summer season is lost.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're not essential. However, tourism brings money to New Jersey, so we are essential in bringing the economy back to New Jersey. So hopefully the governor sees that and we're able to open sooner than later.
In a report released earlier this month, the New Jersey State Tourism Board estimates that tourism spending will drop this year by about a third because of COVID-19. But that's only if things get back to normal in June. But for some people out on this first day, the reopening might be coming too soon. Selena Hernandez got takeout from a favorite boardwalk food stand when she saw it was unexpectedly open yesterday. But she worries that the social distancing being practiced today may not be possible if crowds come for Memorial Day.
It's going to be packed, and I know for a fact. Everybody's been waiting for this day, and now that this day came sooner than what we expected, it's just going to be a madhouse at this point.
Seaside Heights has in the past had a reputation for some outlandish behavior. It was, after all, the setting for MTV's infamous Jersey Shore reality show.
One minute you got three girls in a jacuzzi, next minute somebody's in jail and you have to bail them out. That's what happens down at the shore.
But Mayor Tony Vaz says he's confident that this community can meet the challenge of social distancing.
If we just obey the rules, you know, you got to stop at a stoplight. That's a rule. So you know if it's social distancing now, social distancing. If you know it's another mandate, follow it. I'm an optimist. It has to get better. I don't have the magical number when, but it will get better.
In Europe, some border restrictions put in place to prevent the spread of COVID-19 are being relaxed. A border fence separating Germany and Switzerland was dismantled last night. It's part of an agreement by those countries, as well as Austria, to begin opening borders again. German Prime Minister Angela Merkel said earlier this week that she would like all emergency border controls in Europe's 26-nation Schengen zone removed by June 15th. Also in Germany, the country's premier soccer league, Bundesliga, resumed play today without fans. It is the world's first major soccer league to start up following a two-month pause due to the coronavirus pandemic. In Greece, more than 500 public beaches reopened today as the country experienced its first heat wave of the year. Beachgoers were required to keep their distance as officials stipulated how many people could be on the beach and exactly how far apart umbrellas needed to be. Reopening beaches is the first major easing of Greece's coronavirus lockdown. To date, it has had just a fraction of the cases of many neighboring countries, including Turkey. Starting tomorrow, Greeks will be allowed to attend church, and tourism officials hope to welcome back foreigners in July. Brazil's health minister resigned last night after just 1 month on the job. The shakeup comes as the number of coronavirus infections in Brazil continues to rise. Nelson Taisha did not provide a reason for his resignation, but it came just a day after Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro pressured him to accept the use of chloroquine to treat COVID-19 patients. The drug, which is used to treat malaria, has been praised as a therapeutic for the new disease by Bolsonaro and President Trump, though it lacks scientific support. Brazil has become an epicenter of the coronavirus outbreak, setting daily records for infections each of the last 3 days. On Friday, the health ministry confirmed more than 15,000 new infections, despite relatively low rates of testing. Tonight, we continue our coverage of Amendment 4 in Florida, which in 2018 restored the right to vote to people with felony convictions, or returning citizens, as they prefer to be called. In 2019, Florida passed a law saying that former felons cannot vote until they pay off all fines and fees related to their convictions. Voting rights advocates are suing over that law. For now, those with felony records can still try to have their debts waived through the court system. But the coronavirus outbreak has complicated that process. Desmond Mead is the head of the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition and is himself a returning citizen. NewsHour Weekend's Yvette Feliciano recently spoke with him. This segment is part of our ongoing series, Chasing the Dream.
How has the COVID-19 pandemic affected the process by which returning citizens can regain their voting rights?
The stay-at-home order that was issued by Governor had a great impact on our court system and with our clerk of courts, as well as with our judges. Immediately after the stay-at-home order was issued, we had courts that were shutting down and that they were only open for like essential cases. And eventually they moved more towards video hearing. And so the hearings that we needed in order to get a person's sentence modified in order to remove their fines and fees, they were low priorities, so we didn't see any cases where people were able to utilize the courts to be able to vote again.
What's the latest on the legal battle over Florida's law on paying off fines and court fees? Has the case been able to proceed despite the coronavirus pandemic?
Thankfully, yes, it did. As a matter of fact, as of last week, the case has concluded. And right now, everything is in a holding pattern, waiting on the judge to issue his final decision. The trial judge made a determination to certify this case as a class action. And that's very significant because prior to that certification, any rulings that was coming out of the courts only really applied to the 16, 17 plaintiffs that was named in the case, and it did not apply broadly. But now with class action status, that means that the ruling that's going to be coming out of this trial or this court is going to have an impact on every one of the 1.4 million.
How else is the COVID-19 pandemic affecting returning citizens on the outside?
We have a lot of folks who were business owners. Some of our leaders own businesses, and they were forced to have to shut down their businesses. And while they may have been relieved through small business loans and various relief acts, they were denied an opportunity to even apply for some type of relief from the federal government because they had a previous felony conviction. And then in other cases, when we have returning citizens that are out there working, it's hard enough just to get a job when you have a conviction on your record. But when you do get it, a lot of times it's returning citizens that's the first to be laid off when the hard times hit a small business.
How do you see the COVID-19 crisis affecting voter turnout among returning citizens this fall?
There's a lot of concern about people actually going to the polls and putting themselves at risk. But the problem that we have here is that, you know, while we're encouraging folks to engage and vote by mail, you know, the reality is that people like me who have fought long and hard to get their rights restored is really looking forward to actually going in to a voting location and actually casting that ballot in person. That's an experience that I've been personally longing for over 20 years. So there's a struggle there. There are going to be a lot of folks that probably will come out to vote, but I think that COVID-19 may prevent people from voting, and they probably won't even vote by mail.
Desmond Mead from the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
There's general agreement that one of the biggest impacts from climate change will be on the coastal regions and islands that coexist with the seas. Islands like a tiny speck of a place in the equatorial Pacific called Rose Atoll in the U.S.-administered territory of American Samoa. It is a place few humans have ever set foot. Now a protected sanctuary for dozens of wildlife species that have rested and nested and raised their young there for generations. As part of our Samoan Islands Shifting Tides series, special correspondent Mike Taibbi joined a team from the Department of Fish and Wildlife Service to see how Rose is doing and might do in the near and distant future as climate change marches on. Reporting for this story is supported by Pacific Islanders and Communications.
Approaching Rose Atoll, it doesn't look like an island really, more like a faint smudge on the horizon, not much to it at all. But then you enter the lagoon through a narrow opening in the surrounding reef. You make out some trees. You notice the green sea turtles weighing hundreds of pounds, lolling or coupling in the waters around your boat. And then you see and hear this. It is an incessant riot of sound and a dizzying sight. Tens of thousands of birds, perhaps 100,000 or more on some days, circling or diving, or traveling to and from their foraging expeditions so they can feed the next generation.
So here, these clothes have already been frozen and they're sealed.
Before we embarked on our trip to Rose, we were briefed by host Brian Peck, a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Environmental Management Specialist who's been one of the most frequent human visitors to one of the least visited places on the planet.
The risk, as with the quarantine clothes and freezing that we try and prevent, is the introduction of an invasive species.
In this case, quarantine, meaning clothes we've kept in a freezer for at least 48 hours to kill off any invasive species.
How do we know that we're not carrying some sort of bacteria in our hair, on our body?
Bacteria, that's hard to prevent against. Yeah. We're really concerned about seeds, and that's why we bring new clothes out to Rose, and then insects, and that's why we freeze them.
From American Samoa's capital, Tutuila, it's a 180-mile eastward passage to Rose Atoll, making it the southernmost point of the United States. Sorry, Key West.
How many times has it been now, by your count?
You know, I've lost count, or I don't keep count, but I would say 15 to 18 times.
And each time, whether accompanied by other scientists or experts, or by educators and students, or journalists, he has his assembled team take Rose's temperature, literally and figuratively.
I was so shocked when Brian emailed me that I got the spot to come here, so I was pretty excited.
Ave Pepa Fua, she goes by Ave, a marine science student at American Samoa Community College and an aspiring marine biologist, helps him set temperature loggers in the warming lagoon waters and on land as well.
Working outside the channel was pretty amazing. I've never seen so much CCA, crustose coralline algae.
That coralline algae gives the coral reef its distinctive rose hue and the island its name. And in a series of snorkeling surveys, Ave and we observe the sharks and other native species and note the level of coral bleaching caused by warming waters that helps describe the health of the reef. So far, so good.
Today we saw several species of sharks and many of them. Yeah. So that's a sign of a healthy ecosystem where you have the top predators. There's enough prey that they can forage on.
And it's when you walk inland from the coral sand shore that tiny Rose, all of 16 acres, spills its secrets. A seeming armada of a dozen distinct seabird species that come here to mate and nest year after year in the Tornofortia and Pisonia trees and anywhere on the ground. Sooty terns and white terns, brown and red-footed boobies, noddies and frigate birds, and red-tailed tropic birds, eggs and hatchlings and fledges and chicks on the verge of flight, everywhere.
Tiny place, tiny reef, but it's critical for this entire region of the South Central Pacific Ocean. Within American Samoa, over 90% of the seabirds nest here on Rose Island. 16 acres, 90% of the birds.
And every visit, there are the tracks that Peck follows from the water's edge a few yards into the vegetation, where another female green turtle has returned to lay her eggs.
This turtle went up. I think there's a turtle up there.
This one, surprisingly, before the sun's gone down. Peck's process kicks in, painting a nail-polished name tag on her shell, measuring her size, and making sure she has a flipper tag to track her migratory pattern.
This is the first time I've seen a turtle up during the daylight in the evening time.
These turtles usually cover about 1,000 miles and several years before they return to Rose to nest again, undisturbed, like the birds above.
It's great habitat. It's protected. The birds are nesting. The sea turtles are nesting. So it's, the species are doing their thing. No humans that live here. There's no predators here. So that's rare to have an intact entire habitat.
But there are always threats. At one point, rats were a destructive, invasive species on this island. That is, until the Fish and Wildlife Service finally eradicated them in 1993. Today, it's a population of ants that transport tiny aphid-like insects called scale insects that suck the sap from the leaves of the Pisonia tree.
You can see the tiny ants that are tending the scales.
These tiny invaders pose a real danger to the tree that's favored by many nesting bird species here.
You can see these leaves are just completely infested.
And the few coconut palms on the island, of no use to birds looking to rest or nest, are also a threat to choke off the more useful trees on Rose. So, part of Peck's extensive to-do list for each visit, to clear away any palm saplings and to kill off the adults. Then, on each circuit of the island, he collects the man-made flotsam and jetsam that will wash up on any shore, even here. And he positions motion-activated cameras to record wildlife events, or even the arrival of any unannounced visitor who ignores the warning billboard or comes ashore in an emergency.
It is a remote place. Very few people will ever come here.
Or should ever come here.
Or should ever come here.
Or in the not-too-distant future, might find there's no island to come to. Last year, the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, updated the dire projections in its oceans report that low-lying islands and coasts are uniquely threatened by an accelerating cocktail of measurable threats: warming and rising oceans, ocean acidification, and more frequent and more intense storms.
Given the IPCC projections on the impact of climate change, it makes sense that a laboratory called Rose would be an ideal place to measure those effects. At its highest point, Rose is only about 10 feet above sea level, putting it right in climate change's wheelhouse.
Peck's own surveys have confirmed significant changes in the shape and topography of the island, especially following extreme sea level events like the cyclone that hit in 2016. Even during our stay, when we slept in tents and had minimal gear, a couple of short but powerful squalls, weather events now more frequent and intense, scraped the island and collapsed one tent and the canopies that protected our equipment.
How much of a priority is it to protect the vegetation here when severe weather events can wipe it all out in a day?
Oh, it's absolute priority of just having the native trees and shrubs. And they're resilient, if the stressors, if we can control the scale insects, they'll be able to, they've evolved with storm events, so they'll be able to withstand that. Some might die, but then they'll regrow.
And the birds keep coming back in.
And the birds are able to rebound too.
Nature has proven that it can overwhelm the best levels of protection and management. And according to the IPCC, the pace of seawater rise is already twice this century what it was all of the last full century. Since our visit last fall, Brian Peck has been back to Rose twice to monitor the sea turtles and the coral reefs. In March, he did find that increased water temperatures have caused minor bleaching to the corals. For now, though, Rose Atoll remains teeming with life, as it has been since humans first saw it, alive and essential, but never more fragile.
To get a special 360-degree view from the island and a behind-the-scenes look from our trip, go to pbs.org/newshour or visit our Facebook page. That's all for this edition of PBS NewsHour Weekend. For the latest news updates, visit pbs.org/newshour. I'm Hari Srinivasan. Thanks for watching. Stay healthy and have a good night.
PBS NewsHour Weekend is made possible by Bernard and Irene Schwartz, Sue and Edgar Wackenheim III, the Cheryl and Philip Milstein family, Rosalind P. Walter, Barbara Hope Zuckerberg, Charles Rosenblum. We try to live in the moment to not miss what's right in front of us. At Mutual of America, we believe taking care of tomorrow can help you make the most of today. Mutual of America Financial Group, retirement services and investments.
When it comes to wireless, Consumer Cellular gives its customers the choice. Our no-contract plans give you as much or as little talk, text, and data as you want. And our U.S.-based customer service team is on hand to help. To learn more, go to consumercellular.tv.
Additional support has been provided by and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and by contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you.